Welcome to Two Bees in a Podcast, brought to you by the Honeybee Research and Extension Laboratory at the University of Florida's Institute of Food and Agricultural Sciences. It is our goal to advance the understanding of honeybees and beekeeping, grow the beekeeping community, and improve the health of honeybees everywhere. In this podcast, you'll hear research updates, beekeeping management practices discussed, and advice on beekeeping from our resident experts, beekeepers, scientists, and other program guests. Join us for today's program, and thank you for listening to Two Bees in a Podcast. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Two Bees in a Podcast. Amy, I am so incredibly excited today about our guest. I've met our guest a few years ago, and since then, she has just been truly a wonderful person, a wonderful collaborator, a great inspiration for me and my program. I really have enjoyed getting to know her, her family, and her team in recent years. And Amy, of course, I'm talking about Professor Guntima Sowanapong, who I've now known for a few years. She manages the Honeybee Laboratory in the Department of Biology in the Faculty of Science at Burapa University in Chonburi, Thailand. I've had the great pleasure of visiting her at her university multiple times. We've hosted her here at the University of Florida, and I think we've maybe got a great future of collaborations together. Gun, thank you so much for joining us on this podcast.
Hello, everybody. Good evening there. And I would like to thank Jamie and Amy for inviting me for the podcast. It's a pleasure to be here today. And my name's Guntima Sowanapong. I'm a professor at Department of Biology, Faculty of Science, Burapa University, Thailand. I graduated my PhD from Chulalongkorn University, where I started my bee research there. Yeah, thank you very much again for having me here.
Well, Gun, like I said now multiple times, I've known you for a few years, and it's been an absolute pleasure. You're a wonderful collaborator and an even more wonderful person. And so I've really been excited about interviewing you for the podcast because I'd like to have our listeners get to know you. So, Gun, since this is your first time on our podcast, could you tell us a little about yourself and how you got into honeybee research?
Thank you very much about the question. I'm a professor in biology at Faculty of Science, Burapa University. I graduated my bachelor degree from Department of Zoology, Chulalongkorn University, and also got my master degree and PhD at, same university, Chulalongkorn University from Bangkok, Thailand. How did I get into the honeybee research? Because of I like having honey. And also when I was undergrad student at Chulalongkorn University, I took a beekeeping course, which had been taught by Professor Wong Si Lee. He's a very, a well-known professor of honeybee. And at that time, I learned a lot about honeybee biology. And also I have chance to visit many bee farms in Thailand. And at that time, it's, made me realize that honeybee is such amazing insects. And I think they are lovely and they are really interesting. That is why I decided to start my senior project or individual study about honeybee thermoregulation. And I focus on Epispholea and I start from that. That is why, I have long story about honeybee research. Yeah, thank you.
Dr. Gun, I think anyone who meets you knows that you live and breathe and love honeybees. So I always like to see photos of you working bees, and I love seeing your bee research in Thailand. And Thailand is really a special place to keep honeybees. So here in Florida, we work with Apis mellifera, and that's the only honeybee and species of honeybee that we have here in Florida. And so can you tell our audience, how many species of honeybees are there in Thailand, and which one is your favorite and why?
Yeah, thank you for the very good question. So from the fact that Thailand is the tropical country, so that is why we the research, honeybee species in Thailand, we have 5 honeybee species. It's 4 native species and 1 imported species. I will start with the biggest one. The first one we call giant honeybee or Apis dorsata. This one is it's very, very important for pollinator in Thailand, because they can forage many flower, both crop plant and wild plant in Thailand. So from our research, this Apis species can forage more than 68 bee plant in Thailand. So it's it's very interesting that they can forage many plant species, both wild plant and crop plant, and they build a net hang on the big tree, and the net of this species is very big, and Thai people, especially bee hunters, love hunting them. One net of this species, they can take about 20 to 25 kilograms per colony. And this one is very big and very interesting. And Thai people love having this, honey from this Apis species, because they believe that the honey of this species contain medicinal plant, medicinal property, and that is why they, consume them. The second honeybee species of Thailand is Apis vorea. We call dwarf honeybee, and sometimes many people call them red dwarf honeybee, because when we look at the body structure, the first two abdomen segment, they look red. That is why we call red dwarf honeybee. And the body of the body size of this bee species, they are quite small when compared to the first one, and when compared to your bee, what you have, Apis mellifera. That is why we call red dwarf honeybee, because of the abdomen red, and the because of the size is small. That is why we call red dwarf honeybee. And this species also very important, for crop plant, and very important for also wild plant. And you can find them very easy when you drop, during the highway, and you can see people sell this bee species, beside the long side of the road. And the third one is also the small bee we call red dwarf honeybee, because the first abdominal segment of this species look black, and they are very small. This species is the smallest species of honeybee. And unfortunately, this species, it's very difficult to find them this day, because in Thailand we have a big problem about deforestation, so they cannot adapt to new environment when compared to Apis vorea. That is why it's very difficult to find them this day. So this one is very interesting as well, but we try to find more colony to study them more. And the fourth honeybee species, also the native species of Thailand, is Epistorana. This species is the most important, native species for beekeeping in Thailand. This species can be found throughout Thailand, and Thai beekeeper like keeping them, especially in the southern Thailand, because the weather there is very hot, and Epistolana can, adapt themselves in hot weather very well when compared to Apis mellifera. This one is also important for pollination. We use this species to pollinate in many agricultural farms in the east of Thailand and the south of Thailand. And the last species of honeybee we have in Thailand is Apis mellifera, which is an imported species. We introduced this honeybee species since 1940 for beekeeping, because Apis mellifera, they adapt themselves to new environment quite well, and they can produce much more honey when compared to what we have in Thailand. Yeah, but the big problem of keeping this species is they cannot adapt themselves or against themselves with the mite we have in Thailand, especially Topilelaps. This is the big problem when a beekeeper in Thailand keep this bee species. So yeah, this is all overview about what we have in Thailand. Yeah, thank you very much.
So Dr. Gunn, which one is your favorite?
Oh yeah, very interesting and good question. Actually, I love all honeybee species because I love honeybee. But if I have to say about the favorite one, the most favorite one, I like to say I like Epistolaria the most, because I start working with bee when I was undergrad student. As I mentioned earlier, I studied thermoregulation. Thermoregulation and Epistolaria calm, and then I found out that this species, they can control the temperature in the calm, between 29 to 32 degrees Celsius. Even the weather in Thailand, it's not constant like that. So they can keep the temperature about that range. It's very interesting, and they are so cute. And when you look at the body structure of this bee species, they are very, very beautiful. Yeah, I like orange color, and that is why this honeybee species is the most favorite one. Yeah, thank you. Thank you very much.
So Gunn, your enthusiasm about honeybees is so contagious. And I know when I spend time around you, just listening to you talk about bees and beekeeping in Thailand is amazing. So you mentioned five species: Apis dorsata, the giant honeybee; Apis florea, the dwarf, the red dwarf honeybee; Apis andreniformis, the black dwarf honeybee; Apis serrana, which is the bee you say most beekeepers keep; and then, of course, Apis mellifera, which you say struggles with some of the mites that you have in Thailand, particularly Tropilelaps, as well as the environmental and weather conditions, since you have a tropical climate. So you've got five honeybees there. So what makes beekeeping in Thailand so unique, right? What makes it different from other places around the world?
Mm-hmm. Thanks for the question. It's a very good question. I think in Thailand, we have a variety of plant species. It's mean that we have many choice for honeybee to select. They have some preference of the bee plant, and some bee plant we have the group of medicinal plants, it means that when honeybee forage and collect, you know, even nectar or pollen or both, they can, you know, collect some medicinal property. And it means that in the colony, they can, you know, help about the immunity to against, you know, pests and disease in some way, somehow in, you know, our country. And one thing I like about beekeeping in Thailand is beekeeper in Thailand, they don't move Apis sellana, you know, around the country. They just live there and then they can harvest, you know, they often. But for, you know, keeping Apis mellifera, some bee farmer, they move, you know, their colony because of, they want to, you know, harvest lychee honey, longan honey, you know, sunflower and all and other, you know, a species of a bee can produce, you know, can provide honey for the bee species. And I think, yeah, because of they don't move, you know, colony around and just few company of few beekeeper, they move their colony. It's mean that one point, if a farm, they have the bee and their bee, you know, get disease or get infection, for example, by Nosema or even their colony might have varroa mite in, you know, their farm. If they move to other place, it means that they might, you know, bring disease and bring the mite to other place. So for our country, it's good that they don't move, you know, be around, you know, just few colony. I think, you know, the style they keep the bee, I think it's very, very interesting and it's very good for the bee. Yeah, in this way. Thank you so much.
That is so interesting. I'm just, I have so many questions for you. You know, I want to try the longan and lychee honey. I've never had that before. It sounds very good because I like those fruits. And, you know, just the immunity to some of the pests and diseases and the fact that Thai beekeepers don't move their bees around, you know, like we do that here. And so my next question is, you know, what are some of the major issues that you see with beekeeping in Thailand? I know that Jamie had mentioned earlier tropalae lapse, and we don't have that here, and hopefully we don't get tropalae lapse anytime soon. But what mm-hmm. other major issues do you see with beekeeping in Thailand?
Thanks for the question. The main problem, and the main issue about beekeeping in Thailand, I think yeah, it's you know, Thailand is a agriculture country, so Thai farmer, they, you know, use chemical spraying, I mean pesticide, insecticide, you know, you know, in their farm. It's mean that it's not good for honeybee. Some area they use too much, and honeybee die a lot when they go out to collect food, you know, and it's the big problem. We try to educate them, you know, try to save the bee and use chemical in, you know, the right way. And Thai people, they seem to, you know, not listen to, you know, what the government try to educate them. They just use too much chemical. And yeah, this is the big issue in Thailand. And some bee keeper, they try to grow the plant for, you know, their bee, you know, it's, you know, much more, you know, over time these days. And it's good for our country that beekeeper, they have their own land, and then they try to, you know, grow bee flora or bee plant for their bee, and yeah, it's good. But in some area, they, you know, they live, nearby and surrounded by other people. They don't have the honeybee, and they keep using chemical, you know, for their farm. So this is the big issue in, you know, our country for beekeeping. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Thank you.
So Gunn, because you guys have 5 species of honeybees, there's really so many things we could talk about with regard to beekeeping. And just listening to you talk about the issues that beekeepers have, the strategies that they use to work the different species is really amazing. But I want to change topics a little bit because you are also a professor. You have your doctorate degree. You're a mm-hmm. world-renowned honeybee mm-hmm. expert. And so you do a lot of research. You've done a lot of research over the years. You do research now, and I know you'll continue to do so. Every time I visit you, you have a team of graduate students and undergraduate students who are working with you. And so if you don't mind, could you tell a little bit about your research? Can you provide us an overview of the types of projects that you and your team like to investigate?
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much for the question. Yeah, I has been focusing, for the few decades, I has been focusing on honeybee pathogen, especially nosimosis or nosema disease. Yeah, we study the distribution of nosema throughout Thailand, and we find out that nosema distribute everywhere we've been to, and you know, every honeybee species we found nosema, and nosema serrane, and we found out just 2 locations in Chiang Mai, they get infection by nosema apis. It's very few. I can say that most of nosema in Thailand is nosema serrane, and I also try to screen natural product to control nosemosis. In Thai honeybee, and we found out that propolis extract from stingless bee, especially from Tritigona apicalis, is the best one these days. So we use propolis from this stingless bee species to control nosemosis. Not only in the laboratory, is also, try to promote, propolis extracts in the colony level. We provide our extract to many bee farms in our regions, and it's worked quite well. They said that not only, this extract can control nosemosis in their farm, it's also, can make the colony become stronger. That is good. And we also study about the characterization of propolis extract from, different species, collect from different region of Thailand. We want to study which one have highest, content of phenolic compound and flavonoid, group, because this group of chemical is very important. We can, apply them to use in many ways. Yeah, and also, not just only for honeybee research, we can also, suggest. The characteristic of the good one of propolis extracts to other group of scientists, for example, for pharmacy and dentistry as well, because of they have the very important properties. For example, they have antimicrobial activity, antibacterial activity, anti-tumor, anti-cancer. So yeah, this you know this project is also very interesting, and we you know we have quite good data from our group, and we also study about you know host shift change of the mite. You know, in Thailand we have you know Varroa mite, we have Turbidilaps and also Uvarua, and all you know are serious pests of honeybee in Thailand, especially Turbidilaps, and it's you know very difficult to control them. We try to study you know them more and try you know to control you know them you know yeah it's very interesting that yeah we found out that some chemical we extract you know from you know Thai herbs can you know can control the mite, but we have to you know have to do more research because we need to find the appropriate concentration that can control the mite, but you know not you know repel the bee, because sometimes we use too much chemical, and then they also control the mite, and the bee you know leave the colony. That is not good. We have to you know find the appropriate you know or suitable concentration of you know that extraction to control the mite. And another research topic we you know study about the property of honey from you know different bee species, and we also compare the property from you know honey from honey storage area. We study about you know the community of you know good bacteria in honey, and also compare the property of honey from you know different you know company we bought in Thailand. That is our project this day. Thank you very much.
Well, it sounds like you're doing a lot of really great research projects, and especially with the you know chemical properties of propolis and looking at different herbs and the properties that may help with mites and everything above. So I wanted to ask you, I want to kind of cycle back to one of the projects that you were working with. So when I started working at the Honeybee Lab at the University of Florida, that was in 2019. And that was when you were there visiting with one of your former PhD students. And that was Song, Dr. Sanchai Nari. And he was studying propolis to treat Nosema. And can you tell the audience just a little bit more about this research? Were you comparing propolis in Thailand versus, you know, in Florida? And what did your research look like?
Thanks for the question. Because of we had very good data before about you know using propolis extract from tree Trigona apicalis, what we have in Thailand, to control nosemosis in Episphoria, Episolana, and we moved to another species of honeybee, and when you know I have a good chance to visit your lab, Jamie lab, and we try to apply, you know, our knowledge using propolis extract from Apis mellifera. We collect here in Florida, and we try to apply them, you know, in experimental cage. We use a 50% propolis extract, extract, from you know Apis mellifera, we use 50% to control you know Nosema bee. We did force feeding, you know, we provide Nosema spore the dose is 100,000 spore per bee to Apis mellifera, and then we provide them with propolis extract, and we leave them, you know, for 30 days, and you know, after that we start the you know, about the infection. So we found out that propolis extract can, you know, reduce Nosema infection in Apis mellifera here in Florida. And also we investigate, you know, about the protein content that produced from hypopharyngeal glands. This gland is very important for the bee because they produce royal jelly for young larvae bee, and also produce royal jelly for the queen. So yeah, after we provide them with propolis extract from stingless bee and from mellifera, we found out that propolis extract can increase protein content in this gland as well. And also in, you know, we you know, measure the protein content from the gland and also from hemolymph. We took hemolymph and then we measure the protein content. We found out both have higher protein content, you know, after we provide them with propolis extract. That is very interesting data. And not only, you know, the data we investigate and we have got, you know, when we work at University of Florida, we also work with upper Apis species. Yeah, and we moved to study in Apis dorsata as well. And all honeybee species, you know, after we provide them with propolis extract, they can, you know, against nosemosis very well, and also can produce protein content higher when compared to without giving them propolis. Yeah.
So Gunn, it really was a joy to have you and Song in our lab, and I learned so much doing watching him do the research and collaborating with you guys on this topic. And I know that you've spent a lot of time with Nosema and you've spent a lot of time with honeybee pathogens and mites recently. Do you happen to have a vision for where your research is going to go in the future? Do you see yourself continuing to study these mm-hmm. same types of topics, or are there other topics you hope to study as well?
Mm-hmm. Thank you. It's a very good question. So in the future, after we went to the field trip so many places in Thailand, we find out that when we you know, collect the bee, even from the colony and from you know, from the flower, we found that there are other insects beside the honeybee for it in, you know, the same flower. You know, it's mean that if honeybee get infection by some disease, they might share, you know, some disease to other you know, insect species. For example, white bee, solitary bee, or kit bee. And yeah, I think we will move to another, you know, insects, yeah, beside the bee. And we also, you know, want to study about, you know, you know, the foraging area. They might contain some DNA from, you know, honeybee species and other bee species or other insects. So we can study from that, and also study, you know, the community of, you know, bacteria on the flower or foraging area where the bee and other, you know, insect species, you know, share, you know, when they forage in the field. So we want to study that, yeah. And yeah, it's very interesting. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for being on our podcast today. I feel like I could talk to you for days and just ask you so many questions. You're just so knowledgeable and you know about all the different species of honeybees. So I'm really excited to come visit you sometime, and hopefully in the near future. But I did want to ask if there was anything else that you would like to discuss.
I heard about Toppy Labs. They already, found this mite in Europe. I don't know, in the future they might, spread in US or not. For your side, you have something, for example, the mite inspection or, thing, do want to protect, in case of this might spread in US or not. Yeah, it's very important to, have the plan to protect this might, because what I found out from our research is when we infest this mite to Apis mellifera colony, just a few days and Apis mellifera, they leave the colony. Yeah, and they are, pretty bad for the bee. I mean Toppy Labs, when compared to Warua, this one it's much more worse for the bee. So So I think it's good to have a plan to, to protect, in case of this mite, spread to your country and, even in Europe as well.
Yeah. So, Gunn, I think you're right. I think triple ALAPS is one of those international concerns right now. A lot of people are talking about it around the world, and I thank you for bringing it up. Gunn, it's really been great to have you on this podcast. You've given our listeners around the world so much new information and appreciation about beekeeping in Thailand, as well as the research that you do with your students and your colleagues at your program. So thank you so much for joining us on this podcast.
It's my pleasure, and thank you very much for having me here. And yeah, thank you everybody for listening.
Well, Jamie, I think I definitely want to be Dr. Gunn when I grow up. She's so cool. She's got so many projects. She's just hardworking, and it's infectious, just her love for honeybees. It's amazing.
Yeah, she's a really good person. We didn't talk about our commonality, but my PhD supervisor from years ago in South Africa was actually on her student evaluation committee. And so in some ways, we're almost academic siblings. And I didn't find this out until I met her a few years ago. And she proposed to send Song to our lab and come with them to do some research. And when they came, they were just so nice. She is such a good person, beautiful inside and outside, just so accommodating, such a great collaborator. She's a hard worker. So many people visit her. She's up early in the morning, out late at night, works really hard to ensure a good quality program in Thailand. She's really done a great job, Amy. I mean, she's really done a great job.
Yeah, definitely. I was laughing because when they were here, so our listeners I don't think they know this, but we have a lab breakfast meeting every week, and it's with us and the grad students. And, we always joke around saying that the person who wins lab meeting is a person who brings data, right? But not only did Song, as a student, not only did he bring quality data, he brought the cleanest, most crisp, most beautiful data he could bring, right? And that was, he won lab meeting every single week.
Yeah, when you use those words, clean data, for those of you listening who may not be familiar with that, when you do a research project, it's common to just get messy data, which is data that you're not really sure what it's telling you or if the treatments behaved appropriately. Song, on the other hand, he produced this clean data. His results were unequivocal. And you're right, Amy, he always, always, always won lab meeting. And honestly, Song's dedication and his research and his efforts are a clear testimony to Gunn's leadership and mentorship in her program. And I think it's a really good testament to the quality of a supervisor that she is.
Yeah, absolutely. I loved every, just all of her responses. I felt like she knew her honeybees, she knew the different species, she knew what they were used for, and she just really knew her stuff. And so I'm excited because, you know, I hope that our listeners are able to follow some of her research as well. She's just doing a lot of really great things for beekeepers, not only in Thailand, but around the world.
Yeah, and Amy, one of the things we didn't even talk about with her is Cameron and I went over in 2022 to do a study abroad program where we took students from the University of Florida to her laboratory. And I was there for 2 weeks, and then Cameron replaced me and stayed an additional 2 weeks with the student. But Gunn and her research family, they hosted us for a month. They hosted our students for a month. And while we were there the first 2 weeks, she taught us a lot about the diversity and ecology of the different Apis species that she had in Thailand. In the second 2 weeks when Cameron was there, they actually went around the country looking at different beekeeping operations and research programs in Thailand. So she was an amazing host. And every time I watched her or her students give lectures or we went out to the field, they're just so knowledgeable about a region of the world that is so important to honeybee health. And it was just really a great opportunity for me personally and professionally to learn a lot about the other Apis species, but also learn a lot about managing a lab and managing people. She just did a really good job and really a good collaborator. I can't say enough good things about her. She truly is a good person.
It's everybody's favorite game show, Stump the Chump.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the question and answer segment. You know what? We are going to do something new today. I don't think we've ever done this before for a Q&A, but Jamie is not going to be the chump in this episode. Right, Jamie?
I have passed the chump responsibility the to someone else. That's right. Not permanently. We just want to chumpify him today.
That's right. Just for today. And then we'll leave him alone. But so we have today Dr. Cameron Jack, who is also a professor here with us at the University of Florida Honeybee Research and Extension Laboratory. And we decided to ask him some of the questions for the Q&A segment because he really is our oxalic acid specialist. And Cameron, you've been doing talks all over the world. You just got back from Australia, to talk about varroa control. So we wanted to invite you on, one, to make fun of you just a little bit, not really, but two, to really ask questions that beekeepers are asking about the current status of a lot of what's going on right now. So, you know, just to kind of preface to the listeners, you know, when you're listening to this podcast in 2083, you know, one day in the future, this information may not be relevant, right? So a lot of the information we're sharing out there is right now, we are in July of 2023, but I'll go ahead and move forward at this point. Okay, Cameron. So the first question we have is about extended release oxalic acid. So I guess the first question really is just tell us what extended release OA is. And if you have any information on, you know, permit requirements or the availability or let's just talk about what it is.
Sure. So first of all, let me say that I'm honored to be chumpified today and maybe be the first chump other than Jamie. And, if you ask my wife and kids, I'm chumpified all the time because I know nothing at home. So, So oxalic acid or extended release oxalic acid. So let me quickly just start off by just telling you a little bit about what I know about how it works and kind of what it is. So with regular oxalic acid that you are either vaporizing inside of a colony or you're trickling, right? What you're delivering them in a way that is kind of like a flash treatment. I mean, it's there. The kind of actually, in my opinion, one of the beauties of oxalic acid is that it breaks down very quickly, but it works for a short amount of time, but it doesn't leave, you know, it doesn't build up inside of the hive because it breaks down so quickly. But you know, if you're thinking of a practical standpoint of wanting to control varroa, it's beneficial to have, you know, a chemical treatment that can hang around for a while. So as the mites are emerging from the cells, you know, as bees emerge, you know, the mites that are reproducing down in those cells will emerge. And then there's still this chemical that's there that they are going to come into contact with and die. So that's, you know, that's kind of the goal, is you're taking a compound that it breaks down readily in the environment and you're trying to get it to last longer. And some, you know, of the ways that people have found to do this is to find some kind of a carrier that will allow it to stick around for a while. So people have been, you know, experimenting this with glycerin for a long time. You know, there's some other types of mix-ins, right, that you can help keep oxalic acid kind of stable for periods of time. So, you know, there is actually a registered product for this, but it's not registered in the United States. You know, in South America, there is a product called Aloin Caps that has been tested in the United States, but it's this kind of extended release oxalic acid treatment. You know, from what I've talked to, I've definitely heard varied reports. And so in certain locations, particularly, you know, some areas in the southeastern United States, where it could be really hot and humid, it really hasn't worked very well. And maybe in some other locations, typically where it's a little bit drier, not as humid, they've seemed to have a little bit better success with that registered product. But there's also, you know, the formulation of it is not terribly complicated. And if you looked online, you know, people are doing all sorts of concoctions in their kitchens and can kind of make the same product. But this is where it would definitely be tricky, and you'd really need to know kind of your own state regulations, because you'll most likely, since this is not a legal registered product in the United States, and if you're making your own thing, you're technically going against the law. You would probably need to get some kind of a permit from your state. Now, this is where it would be, you know, really not good of me to just start to recommend anything for anybody, because you would really need to do the research and talk to your apiary inspectors or regulators in your state, or your local jurisdiction, wherever you are in the world. And find out what you can and can't do. Because in some states, you can get an experimental use permit to test this and to try this. In some cases, some states, you would not be able to do that. So that's basically what extended release oxalic acid is and does. But you really, you'll have to do some more digging in your own location to see if it's something that you can actually do in your own colonies.
I'm wondering if other folks around the world have some sort of equivalent extended release oxalic acid use that they can do. But it sounds like, at least here in the U.S., that it's not currently possible, and we don't know for sure when it will be. Right? Is that essentially
the take-home message? That's a really accurate statement. It's that we're not entirely sure when. I do know that there are some states that have initially passed some, you know, I guess legalization, I'll say, of doing some like experimental use of this, and then have also kind of removed that after a short period of time of having some other, you know, EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, coming down and being like, actually, you shouldn't be doing this yet without these proper steps. So it, I think even in the United States, it's very much in a state of flux right now, and probably over the next few months, we'll get some clarity as to what you can and can't do.
So, speaking of flux, I'm going to transition to the next question, and everyone's going to laugh after they hear the second question. The question is about a new product called AmaFlex. I don't know if you've all, that's right. I almost feel like, Jamie, I feel like I need to be like, Ama, and you have to like,
Flex.
Yeah,
Flex
exactly. It.
Sorry, my bad. That was my best tough man impersonation
of Flex. So, Cameron, the second question is from a local beekeeper who's curious about the current availability and efficacy of AmaFlex treatment. So I guess that's a new treatment that's just recently come out. And, you know, we are not endorsing it, but we are interested to know, you know, about new products that come out for beekeepers. So do you have any information that you can share with us on, you know, what you know about the treatment?
Yeah, sure. Let me let me tell you a little bit. I was a few weeks ago, I was in a meeting with a few different honeybee researchers from around the country. And there was somebody from Vito Pharma. That's the company that produces Amiflex, this new treatment. And she was able to tell us a bit more about the treatment, how it worked, how it will be used, et cetera. And so I have a little bit of background with this. So having not tried it myself or verified any of these findings, let me just tell you kind of what I was told, right? So the basic concept of Amiflex is kind of like what we were talking about when just a moment ago, when I was talking about like oxalic acid having an extended release, where oxalic acid is like a flash treatment. It's something that acts quickly and then does not hang around. And then extended release is trying to make it hang around longer. So now let's move to like Amitraz. So typically, at least in the United States, right, if you're going to apply the compound Amitraz, you're going to get a product also, you know, from Vito Pharma, that's Apivar. These are the strips that will hang around, you know, for 42 days. So about 6 weeks, right, where they're hanging and staying inside the colony. So what they're trying to do with this product is it's using the same active ingredient of Amitraz, but it's meant to be that flash treatment. And the reason that this could be useful is that there are periods of time, maybe if you're a beekeeper and you know you're going to go into a major nectar flow in 2 weeks, but your mite counts are high and you want to do something to help your bees to kind of bring those mite counts down, and you really can't stick in a strip and put it in and have it for 42 days, or else you'll totally mess up your opportunity to make and produce honey during that time, because you'll have chemical strips in there. So this is intended to be that kind of in between, like that quick flash treatment that you can use to drop mites in a hurry and then put your honey supers on soon after and make your honey, right? So that's kind of what the goal is. And the way it's applied is it's just you would purchase the chemical that is going to be mixed. It almost looks like a caulk gun, like if you're squeezing caulk down and you would form a line kind of like on a tongue depressor. And the idea is that the bees would go, they would clean it up and spread it all over their bodies, spread it all over each other, and quickly, you know, kind of flash treatment again, kind of hit all the mites in a short amount of time. So that's kind of how it's applied, what it's for. So how it can be used, at least currently, is actually incredibly limited. In fact, it's not something that everybody can just go out and buy. The way that the permitting works for this treatment is that you will actually have to be a registered pest control operator. So you'll have to have some kind of, we call it a PCO license, a pest control operator license, which means you'll have taken tests and had some training about how to safely use and manage pesticide use. So in order to even buy the chemical or to buy the treatment, you have to have that PCO license. So a lot of commercial beekeepers do have somebody kind of on their team or on their staff that has this license, but probably for the vast majority of backyard or hobbyist beekeepers, I mean, that they're not going to be able to touch this stuff because they don't have that licensing. So at least a little bit of what they shared with us is in terms of the treatment efficacy is that they do see a little bit of a drop in it. And sometimes that could be helpful at certain times. It really wasn't like a massive reduction in your mite population, because really the way that the product is designed is meant to, since it's meant to be a flash treatment, it's actually kind of a low dose that doesn't stick around for too long. So it kind of hits the mites that are currently on the bodies of the adults, but is only going to last for a couple days. So they didn't see massive, the researchers who were developing this product didn't necessarily see like massive reductions in Varroa counts, but it might be enough to kind of hold you through that period of when you don't want to be treating, which is maybe during like a nectar flow or something. So this kind of product has a place in the market and can be useful for beekeepers. Personally, I mean, I'm I'm a little nervous about having another Ametraz based product where beekeepers are noticing resistance kind of throughout the world to Ametraz already. And, you know, potentially this could, you know, work to exacerbate the problem if everybody's, a lot of commercial beekeepers are running out and doing this frequently. We're just basically adding more Ametraz into our repertoire, which just, I don't know, kind of make it, in my mind, it could exacerbate some of the resistance issues. But nevertheless, you know, beekeepers, we're all kind of desperate for good varroa control. And this is a product that is hopefully going to fill at least a little niche for a few beekeepers.
So Cameron, the next question comes from someone who asks, what is the airspeed velocity of an unladen swallow?
Was that person from Monty Python?
Yes, they were from Monty Python and the Holy Grail. But you know what? I looked this up online. It's actually 32.4 kilometers per hour. Okay. So 9 meters per second. So for the Americans,
you wouldn't have
there,
gotten thrown off the bridge. Yeah. If that question had been posed to you.
Well, I thought you were going to ask me, well, what do you mean? Is it an African or European swallow?
Yeah, I should have. I'm a little rusty on my Monty Python. Or else I won.
In all seriousness, we did get a question related to potential impacts of oxalic acid on queens. There's always the concern about the products that we use to control varroa and how they might impact bees. But this questioner says, are there known impacts of oxalic acid on queens?
That's a really great question. And it's something that I do get asked fairly frequently. And I will tell you kind of right off the bat, like I have heard everything, right? I've heard some people tell me I used oxalic acid and it killed all my queens and I'm never going to do it again. I've heard the exact opposite of people saying, you know, I've never had any issues. So let me tell you, at least from my perspective, and then I'll work in what I know about the literature, the scientific literature out there. So, you know, from my perspective of where a lot of maybe our listeners know that we've done quite a bit of oxalic acid work where we've done trickling, we've done vaporization. And even recently, I'm hoping that later this year, we'll have a publication that will show you some of the extended release work that we've done as well. So we've kind of applied oxalic acid in different ways. I have never had any issues with my queen or queen health kind of after treatment, at least not during the periods of time where we are experimentally like really looking and monitoring colonies closely. I mean, there's never been any discernible issues with our queens and queen health. But let me tell you, at least what I've kind of found in the literature when people have asked me this question before, I've kind of gone back to some of the work. There was a really great review article about the effects of like oxalic acid for control of varroa. And this was done, I hate to even say this, is almost two decades ago. It makes me feel old because I've been reading and you can't citing this paper for so long. From Eva Rodmacher and back in 2006. And what they basically took all this European data of oxalic acid use, because at least for you know, in terms of varroa control and oxalic use, I mean, most of that work had been done in Europe in the 80s and 90s. And they kind of went through dozens, I guess, of oxalic acid papers and looked at the different methods of applying it, trickle or vaporization, or in Europe, I mean, in some locations they can spray it onto frames. And they looked at how oxalic acid, you know, impacted queen specifically. At least for vaporization, there was no reported cases of queen loss. Trickling, there was one paper where they experienced about 20% loss in their queens. But then there were several other papers that cited no issues with queens, and was spraying similarly, kind of like to trickler, where they had maybe a little bit of loss with queens or queen issues. And then most everybody else said no. So to answer, you know, that question, Jamie, I guess from what the literature says from my own personal experience, you know, oxalic acid, I assume when applied correctly, does not particularly harm queens or have any issues with queen health. Certainly I could be wrong in the future if somebody, you know, or if anybody misapplied it or directly applied it to the queens or something like that, you know, then certainly there could be some issues, but when applied correctly, it seems like the overwhelming majority of the time your queens are going to be okay.
So Cameron, I appreciate you coming on and answering these questions for us today. We get so many questions really from listeners all around the world. And I would argue, you know, a high percentage of them concern varroa. So you were able to come on and talk to us a little bit about new varroa compounds that might be coming out or new ways to use existing varroa compounds. So I really appreciate your time. And maybe Amy, you someday can step into the chump seat, because Cameron, you did a great job. You make me look like a chump because you just answered those questions so fluently. Well,
thanks for letting me be chumpified today.
I'm a chump every day, just not on air.
Chumpification, that's what we try to do here. So thank you guys for joining us on this on this segment.
Thank you for listening to Two Bees in a Podcast. For more information and resources on today's episode, check out the Honeybee Research Lab website at ufhoneybee.com. If you have questions you want answered on air, email them to us at honeybee@ifas.ufl.edu or message us on social media at UF Honeybee Lab on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. This episode was hosted by Jamie Ellis and Amy Vu. This podcast is produced and edited by Amy Vu and Sarah Sowers. Thanks for listening, and see you next week.